Alrighty, Joel Radio's back with you. It's Joel Fragamenti, along with my very special co-host today. You're the co-host and not the guest. You know why you're the co-host today and not the guest?
Why? Because Corey's not here.
Exactly. So you have more responsibility now.
All right.
Than in the past.
But it pays the same, right?
Yes. It's still nothing. It's
I was
still,
afraid of that.
Hey, look. You know, I'm the one getting hit every month for the credit card bill for this thing, so at least you're not that guy.
Yeah, at least I'm not in a hole.
You're not in the hole. But we're here for Joel Radio. Bill Hildebrand is that voice that you're hearing. Been a guest many times, going all the way back to 2005, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And often credited as my comedy mentor, which, you know, looking at my career, may not be a thing that you want to be known for. Well, but hey.
That's why I quit teaching.
Well, we'll talk about that. But you were also, in your own way, responsible for a thing that I did this weekend. And that was performing as Upchuck the Clown at the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Oh, you're still doing that?
For the 16th time, I've been in town for just over 24 hours as we record this.
And I can't remember who called me about that.
Oh, I know.
I got this phone call out of the blue, and they said, yeah, we got this thing called Upchuck the Clown. Are you interested? And they kind of explained to me what it was all about, and I said,
yeah.
No, and I don't know why I thought of you, but I said, no, I got the perfect guy.
You got the guy. And we were sitting at the bar at the Comedy Castle, probably on a Wednesday night, maybe a Tuesday night. And I walked in, and you go, Joel, I got a gig for you. I'm going to get you this number. And I think we were, you know, emailed it, because I think our phones weren't even capable of sending that over that. You know, so the next day I get an email and made the call to a guy named Rob Bruce over at Psychopathic Records, I mean Insane Clown Posse, and
now,
I talked to him.
Does anybody listening understand who Upchuck is?
I think if you're a fan of this show, you know that Upchuck is an associate of Insane Clown Posse, the gig that you originally gave to me in 2005. No, that would have been 2003.
Somewhere.
I started the podcast 2005. We were talking about that before the mics came on. So in 2003, it was, you're going to host some events. And I went and I hosted events like a Faygo drinking contest.
Right.
Where guys drank Faygo and fastest one to finish one. Many people threw up on stage during that. We had the, you know, we had a costume contest, a lingerie contest, a Miss Juggalette pageant, which the Juggalette are the female Juggalos.
Boy, I'm starting to feel like you owe me.
So I did that, and it was a, you know, they gave me money for an outfit and some makeup and said, here, go get some stuff, and we'll see you in Ohio, and went down there.
Yeah, who made the costume?
Well, originally, I bought a costume from the store.
Yeah.
From, like, the costume. I said, I went to the Lynch's, the costume place, and said, need a costume, need some makeup, and they gave me some shit. And then years later, I had some people, and I went to a place that makes sporting jerseys and had them make a custom embroidered jersey for me, a couple of them.
Yeah.
Then I had our friend Ann.
Yeah, that's what I was going.
Who makes costumes. Well, what she did is she took those jerseys and turned them into a clown suit to my specifications. And I still wear those. I wore one this weekend from her.
That's great.
And, you know, but she was compensated well.
Oh, good.
You know,
I'm glad it worked out.
And now I'm one of the stage managers at the gathering.
Jeez, you're moving up.
So now I'm like one of, and I think in terms of seniority, there might be, aside from Insane Clown Posse and the general manager, Billy Bill, I might be the guy who's been there the longest at this point. I mean, I'm right up there. So it's become a thing.
You're known for sticking with shit, that's for sure. Podcast, comedy, and Upchuck the Clown.
13 years of podcast, 15 years of Upchuck the Clown. So I just got back from Thornville, Ohio.
Mm-mm.
The place so bad they don't even have a comedy gig. But actually, this place that I went to is a place called Legend Valley Amphitheater, which was a big concert destination in the 70s and 80s. And they got all kind of posters of rock shows and country shows. Like, I put one on my Facebook of, they had a backstage poster. It was, I'm trying to remember, I could look at it, but it was Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings.
Oh, yeah.
The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and like the 83 summer tour.
See, I, you know,
doors at noon.
A couple of times I did the magic bag. I wish they had kind of like a roster of the people that have been there, you know.
Yeah. But I think the Grateful Dead played at this venue back in the day and shit like that, so.
Yeah, when I did the magic bag, and I said to the people, I said, no, this is a great venue to come and see people that are on their way up and also on their way down.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be here again.
Yeah. That is a great old line. I mean, I saw Gary Talent of the E Street Band at the Magic Bag last year. 100 people on a Wednesday night.
And we were talking about, you know, I mean, this is going to be my 30th year this month, as a matter of fact, in comedy.
In comedy? Yeah. 30 years?
30
Jesus
years.
Jesus Christ.
And we were talking about, you know, of course, I'm into the old rock and roll, and we're talking about how everybody's died off of the bands I want to see.
Yeah, okay.
Either that or there's one original member and seven new guys, you know, that learn guitar the way you're learning it on the program.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that today, too. I haven't talked about that on the show.
And so, yeah, the Magic Bag, you know, I loved the keyboard bands because I'm a keyboard player.
Okay.
And Emerson, Lake, and Palmer was one of my favorite bands, and, you know, there's only three guys in the band. Two of them are dead.
Yeah, okay.
And so, you know, so they had Carl Palmer, the drummer, at the Magic Bag playing the drums.
Yeah.
But he had two sidemen playing bass and guitar.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing some of the tunes, but there wasn't any vocals.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. It wasn't bad. It was okay. But it's nice to see a superstar like that. Like back in my day, they used to pack venues.
Yeah.
It was just great to be in a place where there's not a bad seat in the house.
Yeah, you know, that is. That
what is that seat?
Thing.
Like 300, do you think?
I think, like, with standing, which did you see it standing or were there tables?
Oh, there was people standing.
Yeah, if it's all standing, I think they can set it up for probably like 350.
Oh, wow.
But I think with seats and stuff, because I did comedy there. There was a comedy festival years ago.
I did it.
You know, I opened for Gilbert Gottfried, and with seats and stuff, it's a little over, I think it's like less than 300.
As a matter of fact, the pass that they gave you hung around your neck for the International Comedy Festival.
Right.
I just threw that pass out the other day. I came across it in a shoebox and said, this is done.
No nostalgia for anything.
Yeah, no, nobody cares.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to show it to somebody and say, look what I got. And they're going to go, what the hell is that?
I never heard of that thing. Yeah. Well, that was, doing comedy. Doing comedy at that festival there wasn't great. Gilbert Gottfried was great, though. I enjoyed opening for him. But anyway, so I'm just back from the gathering. I think I'll talk more about that next week with Corey, because I saw this movie they made about that was tangentially about Insane Clown Posse. And
save the A
like
material
that.
For your
well, no,
real co-host.
Well, no, we got to talk.
Fine.
Well, what do you want to know? I'll answer any.
No,
you interview me for a second about this, and then we'll go.
No, that's
no.
Fine. Nope.
Well, you've got a big weekend coming up at Comedy Castle, and that's why you're here.
Yeah. Well,
more
this
than
is. Look, I'll tell you what. This is a huge weekend.
Yeah.
Because I mean, how many clubs the size of the Castle are in existence anymore in the United States?
Yeah, not
I mean,
many.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And so you know, if you get booked into a venue like this, it's a big deal, and that's why I've gone to the extent. Ladies and gentlemen, of actually renting a bus.
Renting a bus?
You didn't hear about this?
The Bill Hildebrandt tour bus.
I didn't tell you about this?
Tell everybody about
it. Well, I rented a bus that's going to stop at three of my favorite watering holes.
Okay.
That's going to drag people to the venue, because I've always got people, and if you know, if you're another comic, you know what I'm talking about. But nothing drives me nuts, especially after 30 years of hearing this shit, of, oh, I want to come see you. When are you going to be around? When are you going to be local? When are you going to be nearby? And you tell these people, and you give them the information, and you make flyers, and the bastards never show. So I said, well, here's a good way to shut them up. I got a bus that's going to take your ass to the show, so you got no excuse now for not being there, and that's why I'm doing it.
Cool. So they're just going to, it's and do people pay for the bus and everything?
Yeah, they got to pay.
Well, you paid for it, I would assume.
I paid for it, so now they got to
pay for it. Unless you're driving the bus.
No,
you're not driving the bus. Okay.
But it holds 50 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a way to bring them in.
I think we're up to 40 right now,
good,
so we might fill it up here in the next 3 days.
Yeah, that sounds great. And that's at the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak. This coming up July 26, 27, 28. That's this weekend. If you listen to this, you might have missed it. But if you listen to this right away, you got your shot. If not.
And I'm pretty sure, and I'm calling, and I kind of told my friends, this is kind of my farewell show.
You think so?
For the Castle.
For the Castle.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you're bringing all the young punks, you know,
the
kids. But that's what Ridley, you know, he told me about this 2 years ago. We sat down and had a couple glasses of wine when he was at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, sitting there at the corner. And he was telling me, he says, I got to cultivate a new audience. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to bring in fresh meat.
Yeah.
Because the old folks aren't going out anymore, and, you know, he's right.
Well, I think he's right, but I also think that there's a new generation of comedians that are really skipping the clubs, though.
Yeah, they're going
from like open mics to a TV special and to headline in theaters,
exactly.
And that club thing is, and maybe that's why the clubs aren't existing or going out of business.
Yep, that's exactly
because that level of comic doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's a real crapshoot now, man. It's just like rolling the dice.
Right.
You know, there's no, you know, some manager sees you or some producer and goes, oh, we can make a show around that guy, and away you go.
But I think as much as people are saying, well, this is the end of stand-up or the end of comedy, I think it's the end of comedy clubs, if not the end, you know, just because the finances of trying to run that club and pay all the bills when guys are drawing 100 people a night isn't there.
I was having lunch with Sal D'Amelio the other day, we were kind of clicking off all the things that are killing comedy clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, number one is the drunk driving laws. People are afraid to go out.
Yeah.
The first 15 years I was in this business, I never missed a New Year's. Somebody always had a New Year's bash where they wanted to have a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
It was either a club or a banquet hall or something like that. I haven't done New Year's in 15 years.
Really?
Except on a ship.
No,
I'm serious.
Yeah.
And so it's, I did Whitmore Lake last year.
Okay.
You know, but nobody does that anymore because people are afraid to go out.
Yeah.
It's number one.
Well, we have Uber and Lyft and all that garbage now.
Number two.
Is that helping?
No, not enough.
Please, I don't want to blow up your spot here. I don't want to blow your theory out of the water.
I'm older. I'm going to lose my spot.
Exactly.
That's the
problem. Please go. Keep talking, guys.
The other thing is, just the saturation, just the sheer number of comics doing all these freebie shows around town.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, gosh darn it, I keep hearing about this open mic over here on a Wednesday, open mic over here on a Thursday, and somebody's running something on a Saturday over here, and there's all these venues with all these amateurs. And if somebody's never been to a club before and they walk in and they hear some of this shit, they're going, well, I'm not going to a comedy
club. Yeah, that's true.
The other thing that's killing it is cell phones.
Okay. Huh.
I mean, people 35 and under aren't going to pay $12, $13 a ticket to see a show if they're going to be picking up their phone every 10 minutes and looking at it.
Yeah.
If they're not going to pay any attention, what's the point?
Okay.
And so I think that's been a huge factor.
Mm-hmm.
And you add to it cable, YouTube, and all the
Netflix
other stuff,
and
Netflix,
and
there's no point in paying to go to a comedy club anymore.
I think you're right on those points, but it's interesting that on the top end, the top guys, or even a guy that somebody perceives as being hot, people will pay any amount of money to see those people.
Well, yeah.
It's become the top and the, you know, the schism now between the top guys and the bottom guys.
Yeah.
People will go to comedy for free, and it's not any good, like you talked about those open mics. And they really aren't good, and I can get into that.
But, you know, it was that way when I got started.
Enough on that show.
There was always the lower tier, and there's always the upper tier, and there's really not much in the middle.
And you know, so if you're going to go see Jerry Seinfeld, you'll pay $100 to see Jerry Seinfeld, but you won't pay $12. You know, you'll see Jerry Seinfeld in a 5,000-seat venue for $100,
right?
But you won't see a really good comic for $15 in a 200-seat venue.
Yeah.
And to me, knowing the quality of those shows, go to the small venue.
Yeah.
But that's not what people want. They want to see stars.
Yeah.
And I think that's where comedy has become a business more of stars than comedy itself is not an attraction anymore.
They go to see the stars because they know the star style. They know the type of material they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they go see them. You know, you go to a comedy club where you don't know the guy. It's kind of hit and miss as to whether or not this guy is going to hook up with you or not.
But that's also where the venue and the booker comes into play, because a good booker with a good ear will book a good act that most people will enjoy most nights.
Well, yeah, at places like Mark Ridley's.
Yes, exactly.
You know, now, how many other venues actually do that? Nobody
Very few.
Does. You know, they're just putting crap in there because they're doing shotgun booking from some booker.
Yeah.
You know, sends an email to 200 people saying who's available, and the first guy to respond gets the gig. That's not how you book shit, but that's the way it's done.
And I agree with you, and I think it's
call people that's a good fit for whatever, you know, that particular venue
is. Yeah.
You know, you don't send a, you know, I can't say this, but Yeah.
No,
I can't.
That's
say
all right. You don't want to. You don't want to put anybody on blast, and that's fine.
No. Well, I'm not. But if I'm you not know, talking about, but certain types of acts, you don't send to certain places.
Oh, okay. I get what you're saying.
All right. Yeah. This young kid, in the last cruise that I did, it was a cruise out of New York, and don't take this wrong, but it was a bunch of old Jewish people out of New York on a cruise down to Martinique and all these other places, and they sent this young. One of the guys on the show with me was this young 25-year-old kid, and they weren't buying his shit at all.
Right.
You know, they looked at him like a booger on the end of their finger. Yeah. I mean, it was just, it was, and it was a bad call. Whoever said, yeah, this guy will work, it was wrong.
Well, people in showbiz, and this is true of music, I think, too, is that people want to see performers that they can relate to in terms of their age and that kind of stuff. So older crowds should have older comics, and you know, if you're going to book real young guy, it's, you know, I think people look at when people try to book a comedy show, they book, they go, okay, this guy's good. He'll be good anywhere. And that's really not how it works. I think you have good people and they're all, you have good people, and, you know, good African-American comics. You have good, you know, white, you know, young comics, old comics. And you got to say who's going to work in here. And pick out and not just go, well, this guy's good. We'll throw him in this situation and expect it to work because you either don't know your audience and then, you know, those people won't come back if they don't
and some of the good
believe who they're going to see.
The comedy agencies, some of the good ones have disappeared.
Yeah.
And so now what you've got is you've got people that normally book DJs and bands and that type of thing trying to book comedy that don't understand that fit. Yeah. I just got a call from a, and this just happened yesterday. It was Saturday. Got a call from an agency locally here, but they shall remain nameless because I got a couple really good gigs coming up with them. Wanted to know if I'd be interested in doing a show for 20 African-American kids down in Detroit.
Okay.
High schoolers.
Yeah.
I'm 65 goddamn years old, and I happen to be very white.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going, and I said to him, I said, what are you thinking? Are you serious? And he had no idea. I said, you know, look, these kids got to be able to relate.
Yeah, okay.
You know, they're not going to relate to me. You know, some of these kids have never taken a girl to bed. I've been married three damn times. You know, where's the relationship there? Where's the identity?
Yeah. Yeah, they wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But I couldn't believe the guy was actually thought
but
this
they,
would work.
They, yeah, I think bookers sometimes are like, I think, I'm not somebody who really ever booked as a full-time gig, but I've booked plenty of one-nighters and stuff. And I think part of that, and you know, you booked a club, and that's how you, I credit you, because you were the first guy to book me on a weekend show for money. And they're just like, I want to just fill this book so I can put it down and do whatever I want, you know.
Well, that's part of the problem.
The job is done when the book is full, if you're the booker.
Yeah.
And especially the guys that don't have to go to that venue and watch the show. They're just like, hey, the book's full. Hey, here you go.
Well,
here's the headshots. Put these on the flyer.
The lady that used to book me on Norwegian Cruise Lines, she just retired, which is why another agency took it over. But the lady that, she booked the bands. She booked the lounge acts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And these guys are on for months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
The comics are only on 2-3 weeks at a time.
Okay.
And you got like a week's notice or maybe 2 weeks' notice. That it was always short notice.
Okay.
And the reason why she did that was job security.
Okay.
She could have booked for the year.
Oh, I got what you're saying.
And now what she's going to sit in her office and the boss is going to go, what are you doing? You know, because she put the book down and she's finished.
That's an interesting point.
So she held the comics back saying, well, you know, I got all these comics I got to bring in and, you know, I don't have that filled up. I don't have them lined up. And so that's why it was always short notice.
That's an interesting point that I don't hear. Because I know, you know, Mark Ridley, going back to him, he books a year out.
Right.
You know, but I guess he's not going to be replaced.
No, and nobody's breathing down his neck saying, hey, get busy. But it's a great club, folks.
Come out and see Bill this weekend.
The nicest setup in terms of a comedy club and the layout and everything that you could possibly ask for.
So come see Bill this weekend. Go to comedycastle.com. Pick your own seat over on comedycastle.com. And
yeah, just don't pick your friend's seat.
The guys on the bus, where are they sitting?
And they're going to be right in the middle. And each bar is going to have their own table. You see.
You're going that. You're doing all that.
Yeah, I've already.
Oh my goodness!
I've already talked to Mary about it.
Oh
my
goodness!
Yeah.
Well, I hope it dies. So there won't be any. So you'll know when you look out, when some asshole yells something, you'll know, okay, that's.
I'll know by the way they sound. I'll know them by their voice.
All right, that's Freddie from the Hideout over there yelling at me.
Exactly.
And that's, that's the guy from Royal Inn, the guy that usually sits
at
the end of the
bastard,
bar.
Shut up, you bastard, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, come see Bill this weekend. I think my girlfriend's going to come out. I told her that she should see you.
All right.
Because you're responsible for the mess that I am in 2018 on some level.
Okay.
So she should see you. Well, she wants to see, you know, she wants to come to the club with her girlfriends.
Sure.
And she goes, well, who should I see? So I'm going to send her to you instead of some other guy.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, good.
Butts in the seats.
Yeah. Well, so we'll see. If you haven't seen Bill Hildebrandt, come out this weekend. I forget who's opening. Sheila Lovely is in front of you.
Yeah.
And a guy named Brett Klein.
Don't know Brett Klein.
He's a young guy.
Of course he is. He's the MC.
God forbid.
They're not gonna bring
Maybe been doing it for 10 years.
They're
He's
not
going
to bring in Al April to MC the show.
Al April still plays at our club.
I know he does, yeah.
How old's Al now, you think?
Shit, he's got
He's in his 80s.
He's pushing 80, probably.
Yeah, I think he said he's 80, maybe last time I saw him.
So I was working on my fifth schooner. Yeah, he's funny. His delivery's hilarious.
You should just go see Al April, because you really don't know if it's going to be the last time you see Al April.
On Facebook, though, it's Bill Hildebrandt, or Funny Bald Guy, if you're on Facebook.
Oh, Funny Bald Guy.
Yeah, I'm trying to build up the number of likes on there,
okay.
And so I'm all the way up to 14.
Yeah.
Maybe after this weekend, I can push that to 20.
After this podcast, I'm thinking 16 sounds like a realistic goal after an appearance here.
But, folks, if you're sitting there going, you know, what an obscure show, two guys sitting in a bedroom doing this. I was actually on a cruise ship. It was either Alaska or Hawaii. It was the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And ran into a couple that listened to this show religiously.
Yes.
And they knew me from the show. And
they
just
do listen.
And it blew me away.
It does. I mean, at
that one time you did the live thing at the castle, some guy came in from Germany.
Yes.
Yeah, that was nuts.
Niels. The super fan Niels from Hamburg.
Hamburg.
I haven't seen Niels in a while. Niels, get a hold of me.
All right.
But, you know, so, yeah, but the show, and you know, even I went to the Gathering of the Juggalos, and Juggalos are like, hey, I listened to the show.
Yeah,
and,
there you are.
You know, and I'm like, you know, you don't really get that feedback. It's a weird thing, because you're throwing stuff out into the ether. You can look and see how many people downloaded it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't even mean all those people listen to the fucking thing.
Right.
It just means that they... And, you know, a lot of this stuff is set up to be automatic. You know, you turn the app on your phone, it automatically downloads
right.
it. You click a button on the computer. And so you never really know when these things get listened to or by whom and where and when and all that stuff. So
well,
it's a crazy.
Let's do this. Let's
it's
try
a crazy
to,
technology.
Let's try to piss off some different ethnicities and see how much mail you get, and that'll give us an idea.
See how long till somebody fires me from some gig or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Let's start messing with. Never mind.
Corey was saying, you know, hey man, I'm trying to get this job or something. And he goes, and I'm worried about stuff that we said on the podcast. A decade ago, coming back to prevent me from getting... And I go, Corey.
Oh.
Come on.
Let's talk about this for a second.
All right, let's talk about it.
Out of curiosity one day, my now ex-wife, you know, we were talking, we heard something on the radio while we were driving in the car about, you know, you ought to Google yourself.
Okay.
You know, and look up photos of so-and-so.
Okay.
So she does this. So she goes home and, you know, she... Googles herself, nothing comes up, and then she Googles me, and it has a list of the clubs and the agencies that represent me and all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then she Googled photos of Bill Hildebrandt.
Yes.
And now there I am with Joel Fragonetti.
Oh, I know the photo you're talking about.
And there I am after a show signing some girl's tit with a Sharpie. And that photo was posted, you asshole. Oh, if that wasn't a shitstorm.
With her.
What?
It hasn't cost you any jobs.
No.
It just cost your wife.
That just goes to show you, you put that stuff out there. It just cost me a wife, a house, and a dog. That's all it cost me.
I mean, what's the... Believe me, you're better off.
Oh, man.
If I could have put up more photos and ended that quicker, Bill, I would have done you that favor.
Well, okay, thank
but,
you.
But
my attorney thanks
stuff
you.
Never, stuff,
thank
I
you.
Mean, look, I... You know... it is true that, you know, stuff sticks around, photos stick around, and you don't think there's Upchuck the Clown stuff that I'm embarrassed by out there?
Well, I'll tell you what, and another thing I used to do, I got a friend of mine runs a blind factory,
okay.
And I've known this guy for over 30 years.
He makes a factory that makes blinds.
Yeah, they make blinds, yeah.
Not a factory that employs blind people.
That's correct.
Yes, okay.
And anyway, years ago, I used to do human resource stuff.
Okay.
And he says, you know, I'm having some trouble. He says, can you come in and show me how to set up my files and stuff like that? And maybe look at some applications and help me, you know, design a new application and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I took some fresh applications that he had, and I said, now watch this.
Mm-hmm.
And I went onto Facebook.
Okay.
And typed in the name.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, the vicinity and stuff like that. And you'd be surprised the shit that came up.
Yeah.
You know, they'd have a Facebook page, and you go to it, and you're clicking through their photos, and you're going, wow.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you got to be careful.
I think so. But I think that we're also going to reach a saturation point where everybody's got something embarrassing, and then it does, none of it counts. I mean, I think we'll get there, don't you think?
Well, and that's the other thing that we didn't talk about that What's Sal that? And I mentioned. The other thing that's killing comedy mm-hmm. is political correctness.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
It's just driving a stake through the heart of it. You're afraid to, you know, God, mm-hmm. I hate when I get a call from Ann Arbor. As much as I love Roger,
yeah,
you know, going out to a college town like that, man, you're just walking on eggs all the time. And I try to tell these kids, you know, about 10 minutes into the show, look, punks, this isn't a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing of value here.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to change anybody's mind. These are jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at the end of the show, I says, I just want to tell everybody, none of this shit happened.
Yeah.
It's all made up.
It is.
I wrote on a napkin in a restaurant repeated here. It's all it is.
Yeah, because people do take everything to heart. And I do in shows in my act about, you know, I don't do anything politics-wise because, number one, I'm not really interested in doing it. Plus, it's divisive to the audience.
Yeah, you don't
want to
polarize.
But, you know, I'm talking about my dating life and the size of my penis and blah, blah, blah. And people are coming up to me after the show and, oh, I'm sorry to hear about you.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, it's
bullshit.
And my girlfriend's sitting over there. I'm fine. You know, it's not what you think.
She's got a magnifying glass and a pair of tweezers, but she's sitting right in the corner.
But you know what I mean? It's so weird that, you write stuff to be entertaining. That's the goal. That's why you wrote that stuff. And I think people take everything literally. I mean, if you're trying to do a political act at this point, I don't even know how you'd keep that career going.
I did a roast down at the Greek Town Casino for one of the employees mm-hmm. that had just come back from surgery. And I was doing a roast, and I was talking about Farmington Hills. He lives in Farmington Hills. He moved there because he thought it was hilly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's a skier.
Okay,
but he didn't know anything about Farmington Hills. It's flatter than Ellen DeGeneres in a tuxedo. And I got and I got booed.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, oh, come on.
Yes. I think people, when they see, everything is equal now in the minds of the public, meaning jokes and political speech and things that are in newspapers. No one judges them differently. You know what I mean? Oh, somebody made a joke about this. Well, it's the same thing as insulting them in some other forum. You know what I mean? I think speech has context to it. You know, and when you're in a comedy club, none of that should count for anything.
That's just
you're in a comedy club. This person's just saying words.
I'm not pushing an agenda.
Yeah.
I'm just, but here's the thing, though. And see, we could debate this forever. I mean, comedy is funny. Some things are funny.
Mm-hmm.
Not this doesn't pertain to all jokes,
mm-hmm.
but things are funny because there is an element of truth to it.
Sure.
And that's where I think you get into trouble.
But if we were to be politically correct and not speak those truths, then what are we left with? I mean, what's entertaining about,
that's right.
You know, when you take the truth out of the stuff, then you know, it's just,
well, people got to lighten up. Stop taking yourselves so seriously.
Yeah.
Quit being a victim. You know, grow a pair of ovaries, grow some balls, and, you know, come on.
Well, I mean, when I teach my comedy class, and it's something I learned from you, and you sat in on this lecture one day about, you know, speech that is, you know, there's certain buzzwords that you should avoid just because.
Well,
there's no, you know, even if there's not somebody there in the room that's, you know, in a wheelchair, they may have a relative, and then they're going to get upset
right.
that you made fun of yep. somebody, you know, and then they're going to complain. And if they complain, the club may not have you back because they just don't want to deal with the complaints. Whether they agree with you or disagree with you. And
I had this bit I used to do. I said I stopped drinking beer for a while because I read on the label it causes, you know, it causes birth defects.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any. Didn't want any, so I gave it up.
Okay.
And of course, somebody came up to me, oh, you know, that's not funny because my kid.
Yeah, because your kid right, has
perfect.
It. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I knew that coming in. I said it just for you. You know?
Well, it's you just never know. And people are so quick to give their opinion, and I think in the age of social media, people's opinions get out there in a way that, you know, maybe we were better off when everybody didn't have a venue
well, that's
for their
the problem
opinion.
With Facebook.
Yeah.
Everybody on there thinks we care.
Yeah. We never care.
We really
at
don't.
All. You know?
And I really wanted to post something, and I'm afraid to do it, because I really don't want to go there on Facebook.
Good, I'll post it.
All right.
But what can I post?
All I wanted to say to people is, you know, because lately now, within the past year, everybody has gotten so political
uh-huh.
on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just all this shit on both sides of the aisle
uh-huh.
about this guy and that guy.
Sure.
And I got news for you. I used to be in politics.
Okay.
You know, my boss ran for governor back in the 80s.
Yeah, I remember this. So you telling me this.
And here's the deal. You're not persuading anybody.
No.
If you're on there on Facebook thinking somebody's going to read that and go, you know, they're right, it's not going to happen.
You've changed no one's mind.
You never talk.
Opinion, yeah.
You don't talk to the militant. And that's mm-hmm. all there is to it.
Okay.
And that's who's on there posting any kind
right,
of opinion
yeah.
is somebody who's militant enough to post that.
Yeah.
So you're not getting anywhere with anybody. You're just, you know, showing what you are.
Right. Which.
And if that's what you want to do, fine.
Yeah.
But it's not right.
I agree with you. And I think that people, I think that is the fallacy of putting political stuff in social media is that somebody's going to care or be persuaded
yeah.
to your side.
Not going to happen.
And it's not going to happen. And it's just, you know, and I think that people, I think people are generally less happy, you know, if the lens that you're viewing the world is through a scrolling page of everybody's fucking complaints.
Right.
Boy, the world seems like an awful place.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what it's getting to.
But I don't know that the world is an awful place. I don't know that the world isn't the best it's ever been right now. Yeah, I think if you read Facebook or Twitter in certain ways, I think you wouldn't think that. But I think in any measurable way, it probably is better than it's ever been.
I got several gay friends that I see on Facebook, and that's all they talk about.
Yeah.
Is their struggle being gay? I mean,
yeah.
I never post anything else, you
yeah.
know? And yeah, I just want to say to them, you know, hey, look, you know, I like women in fishnet stockings and high heels. And you don't see me talking about that every week. I'm
yeah.
not posting a picture of her going, hey, hot damn, you should be into this. You know?
Yeah, that's a good
hey, don't
point.
Knock until you've tried it.
Right, yeah.
And where's my parade? That's
yeah.
what I want. Where's the fishnet stocking high heel parade on St. Patrick's Day down in New York? Where's my parade?
Go down to 8 Mile. They got them every night down there. Various venues for your trip. Yeah, I think it just all comes back to comedy. How does comedy exist in this world? And I think you go, well, there's people that if you're going to be a political comic, then you're going to find an audience from that perspective. You're preaching to the choir. That's who's going to come. And you can't go into a general. You know, you go to Comedy Castle. People don't know who the comic is a lot of times. So trying to be, you know, anti-Trump to a general audience,
right.
you're going to run into people who support Trump.
Other than the knuckleheads that are on TV that are trying to be cool
yeah.
because they have to appeal to the people in Hollywood like Samantha Bee and all these other people, like Jimmy Kimmel and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Right.
Who really that's on the road does anything political? If you think about it.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think they do.
I can't think of anybody.
Well, just for me as a guy who stands in the back of the Comedy Castle every night, there's very little political material,
right.
unless somebody is specifically political that gets booked, and I don't think Ridley even wants those guys at the club.
And George Carlin did a lot of political stuff,
yeah.
but he was on both sides
well,
of the line.
And that's the best way
you know,
to
he,
do it.
He was
yeah.
a fair opportunity offender.
But I think if I was going to do political stuff in my act, because I have political observations, and I share them on this show, because this isn't a comedy club. And if you don't like it, I don't have to listen to you not liking it. So it's fine. But I think I would want to say, hey, look, if you're a Democrat, you're in, you know, the Republicans are assholes and the Democrats are assholes too. And here's why I'd say that. But I don't feel that people would look at you and go, well, he's being fair. I just think you'd have both sides hating your guts. And then nobody likes you.
Well, that's right. So, like I said before, why polarize an audience?
Yeah.
But here's an interesting joke.
Okay.
And what I find interesting about this joke is, you know, way back in the 70s, when All in the Family came out.
Okay.
Now, have you ever seen any episodes
of
All in the Family?
Absolutely. I've seen many episodes
of
All
in the
Family.
And when it first came out, it was wildly popular, and it appealed to everybody.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why it did that was Archie Bunker, all right, was to the bigots, you know, of the time were saying, well, this is great. Here's a guy that thinks the way I do.
Yeah.
And, of course, the people on the other side who saw him as a bigot says, well, you see, he's just showing what an asshole these people really are.
Mm.
So everybody had something to like about it.
Yeah.
They're going, you know, the people that were kind of like, yeah, Archie's my man. You know, he's telling it like it is. And the other people are going, yeah, he's just showing what an idiot, you know, what stupid thoughts he's got.
Yeah,
you know. And so here's a joke that runs right into that.
Okay.
A guy's walking down the mall.
All right.
And he sees something called a Mexican bookstore. And he's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
So he goes in and he's checking it out and he's looking at some books. And he turns around and hears this, you know, Hispanic guy behind the counter. And he walks up to him. And he says to the guy, he says, hey, have you got that new Donald Trump book about his immigration policies? And of course, the Hispanic guy goes, you know what? Fuck you. Get the fuck out and stay out. And the guy goes, yeah, that's the one.
Hey-o.
Now, the thing is, people can look at that and go, see, that's what an asshole Trump is, because he'd probably write a book
right.
And another guy laughs because, yeah, that's right. Yeah, get the fuck out.
Put him in it, yeah.
So it appeals to both sides. That's kind of my point.
Yeah, that would be a thing. But I think when people and there's another thing, and this I'm not ever expecting the world to come around to this. But, you know, when people get banned for their speech or their belief or whatever racial things that they post, I feel like I want to hear those. And here's why. I think to shut those people up is to, I think we should expose those people for what they are. I think when you censor it,
don't send it underground.
When you scrub it all everywhere.
I want to know who the idiots are.
Exactly. Yeah, we should know. And, you know, you're like, oh, you're going to be banned. You know, you did, like there was a thing on the Facebook guy, Mark Zuckerberg, the chairman founder of Facebook,
right,
said that, you know, Holocaust deniers can stay on Facebook. And his point was like, well, where do we draw the line?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And people will go, and the people saying that they want them banned is like, well, we should not be letting those people out. And I'm going, well, I think to the reader or the person that would be the audience for this kind of stuff, it's pretty obvious right away that that person's an asshole. And I think let's let the assholes be who they are.
Yeah.
And I can make the determination of a person that I want to engage with or follow or hear. I'm smart enough to do that. And are people just not smart enough to make that determination for themselves anymore?
Folks.
And, you know, I don't know.
Folks, are you having fun out there yet? normally a light and fun show.
No, we're going to get to that. Well, you've taken us there, Bill.
Well, I didn't take us there. We're really in the weeds here. We started talking about why comedy clubs are going down.
Well, that's why.
Political correctness in here.
Well, let's get off this subject.
All right.
How
about them Tigers?
Comedy Castle this weekend. Go see Bill Hildebrandt.
Oh, look.
Who's that?
Here's our first complaint. Good thing it's not a live show.
It's not even live. All right. Is anybody I could talk to or no?
No, it's somebody
we'll
looking for
him.
Money.
Oh, well, believe me, this show has none, as evident. But one thing I like about you, too, you're an old rock and roll guy. I like that.
Yeah.
What was your career in rock and roll? What was your in music, in the music business?
I'll tell you what.
Because talk about another business that's going down the fucking tubes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the music business.
Yeah, man, I don't want to bore anybody with this.
Nah,
but,
come on.
You know, when I was a kid growing up, you know, all my contemporaries, you know, back in like junior high and shit were, you know, they were mowing lawns.
Okay.
You know, to make money or doing what they could so they could buy like a mini bike or a motorcycle or mm-hmm. a go-kart or something like that. I mowed lawns to buy recording equipment.
Okay.
And when I was a kid, when I was in high school, I thought that's what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a recording engineer.
Okay.
And by the time I was in 10th or 11th grade, I had a substantial amount of shit in my basement.
Okay.
And I'd have the high school bands come over, and we'd record, and I found a place that would actually cut records.
No.
You know, they and, cut them means it was on what they call lacquer.
Sure.
They could actually do one at a time.
Yeah.
You could play it a bunch of times, but it wouldn't last
very
long.
It was an acetate.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, so I was doing that. And then I was taking this music, I was taking these tapes to this recording studio in Frampton Hills. As a matter of fact, the guy that used to own it, I'm having lunch with him on Wednesday.
Still around. Right.
A guy by the name of Dan Dallas, he recorded such songs as Who's Making Love to Your Old Lady? When
okay.
You're Not Making Love, you got a gold record for that.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Another guy by the name of George Paddock recorded Bob Seger and a ton of other guys. Anyway, a guy finally says to me once, he says he's cutting one of my records on the lathe. And he says, where are you doing this? I said, I'm doing it in my basement. He goes, you're doing this? And I said, yeah. He goes, no shit.
Yeah.
And he goes, how would you like a job?
Right.
I mean, that was a dream come true for me.
Sure.
So I on the weekends, you know, as a high school kid, you know, I worked in the studio and I learned a lot.
What were you recording on? What was your format?
Well, at that time, it was only 8-track.
Oh, okay.
And then when I got into college, we moved up to 16 and then 24.
Okay.
Know, on the big wide tape. This is
big
all
wide tape, sure.
And the 2-inch tape. This is all analog stuff, folks. You
yeah.
know, the reels well, turning and, you know, lights flickering and,
yeah.
and needles rocking, you know, all that stuff. It was exciting back then. Now you just push a button and nothing happens, you know. But, yeah, I did that for a number of years.
Cool. Yeah. So you did all that, and then comedy comes in when then? I mean,
well,
in this
and,
whole
and this comedy came in. Yeah. Jeez. This is all boring shit to me, man.
I'm interested.
No, when I graduated from college, you know, one of the things I found out working at the studio for, you know, about 4 years or so, was there was no money in it.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, unless you were publishing records
yeah.
and they were selling and you were making. And we actually did a couple of things that kind of took off. But,
right.
But the engineer never got credit for it because of something somebody did. But remember Hot Fudge?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, right
on. TV
Whoa,
show. Yeah.
Hot Fudge. Well, it went national.
Okay.
And the publishing company never got the money from it.
Oh.
And so anyway. That's
well, the engineers are guys who are generally paid by the session or by the hour
right.
to work in the, and they're employed by the studio
right.
rather than.
Well, this guy owned
you know,
the studio and
yeah.
the publishing company that was
right.
published with. But anyway, so when I got out of college, I ended up working for this automotive supply company. I worked for the company that brought back the convertible, folks.
Yeah.
On the Chrysler K car, the over-reliant diplomat. That piece of shit. We're the guys responsible for doing that.
I owned a K car.
Did you?
It wasn't a convertible, but
no,
it was a piece of shit.
Yeah, it was a piece of shit. And we took it and we turned it into a bigger piece of shit by putting a convertible in
the
damn thing.
Whatever stability that body had
was gone
by chopping the top
and we
off.
Also, I worked for the guy that owned the company that invented the T-roof. If you know about the glass panels
okay,
that pop out of like
the
Camaro T-tops.
Camaro T-tops,
exactly.
Yeah.
On a Camaro Firebird.
Yeah.
And we had them on, you know, the Chrysler cars and the Mustang.
Okay.
And everything. We did all those. They
right.
actually ran down our assembly line. And we did them for Ford and Chrysler and General Motors.
Mm-hmm. When I remember being in high school, you'd get the aftermarket T-tops.
You could do that.
Yeah.
But we were OEM
you
supplier.
Were the, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
right.
We actually did it for the car companies. But, you know, I started... And we were talking about this, about going to a local comedy show and seeing shit, right?
Yeah.
I had a buddy of mine in radio out in Ann Arbor, a station that's not there anymore, called WIQB, which used to stand for Where I Quit Broadcasting. And he found the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase.
Oh,
he says,
okay.
Man, he says, you got to come to this place. You got to see this place.
Yeah.
You know, this is 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And he goes, you got to see this place, man. This is really a neat club. It's downstairs. It's all dark. You know, only holds about 200 people. And they got these great acts. And I said, you know, I've seen local guys at a couple of golf outings mm-hmm. and a policeman's ball. And they were just horrible. And I said, I don't want to go see some local guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, you got to do this, man. So he finally talked me into it. And as luck would have it, the guy we saw that night, the headliner, mm-hmm. was Tim Allen.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
And he was outstanding.
Yeah.
Now, this is, of course, before he made it big,
yeah.
you know, but the guy was good.
Yeah.
And I walked out of there thinking, holy shit, you know, this is actually not bad
right.
at all. But they mentioned something called an open mic.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I got to go see that train wreck a couple times.
Yeah.
So I started going to open mics, and I eventually got the nerve to go up, and I bombed
mm-hmm.
like
yeah.
a son of a bitch.
I
and,
did as well my first time.
Yep. But I actually figured out what the formula was.
Yeah.
And about after a year of doing that, just fooling around with mm-hmm. it, I lost my job at the other place. We got bought out by this giant conglomerate down in Taylor.
Oh, okay.
And I'd been there for 13 years.
Yeah.
I was a vice president.
Wow.
I was the youngest one they had.
But did they buy out or anything?
Yeah, I mean, they bought us out.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they gave me money.
Personally, you were given some severance.
Out, so I had some
your job
to live
was redundant.
On when I got into comedy, you know. But the guy walks in my office. He says, "What do you do here?" And I said, "I'm vice president of everything that starts with the letter P.
Yeah.
Production, personnel, public relations, and paperclips."
Yeah.
He goes, "You got a degree in any of that?" And I said, "No." Then he says, "Well, you're not qualified."
Oh.
I've been doing this for 13 fucking years. But I saw the writing on the wall. I said, these guys don't want me around.
Right.
So that was it. I took my ball and bat, and I learned a brand new song.
Did you?
Because back then, and this is 1987, 88, I lost my wife, lost my house, and I lost my job. all within 90 days of each other. So I learned a new song.
Well.
Yeah, goes like this. It's very simple.
Yeah.
You might know the words.
All right. I'll sing along if I can.
The whole wide world can fuck right off. Doo-dah, doo-dah. The whole wide world can fuck right off.
Yeah.
So and I went into this crazy business. And this was not the plan, though.
No, I don't think it's anyone's.
And it was like it's like anything else. I wanted to get out.
Yeah, but
they pulled me back
but,
in.
You know, I don't think it's. I think there's people that plan to be in it. And I don't know that those guys necessarily are the ones that stick around. I think it's some other people that sort of figure out, especially if you can figure out a way to be in the business in a way that is on the periphery or something adjacent to it. You know, the booking side of it, the writing side, you know, guys that go write for television, produce for television, kind of use comedy as a way in. I mean, that was my thing is I was going to write screenplays. And in my break between what I thought was going to be undergraduate college, which I finished, and grad school, I started doing stand-up. Well, then I started having success in stand-up and went like, well, grad school will be there.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting to go to grad school.
Yeah, okay. And I'm still waiting to be famous.
Well,
so,
hey.
Hang on.
Makes two of us.
Like
but,
I said,
you're
tenacious, man.
I mean, there is a thing, too, I think, with people who, you know, you will get opportunity. You know, there's no guarantee of fame, but I think that longevity does create opportunity, though. And whether or not that hits for you, you know, I think one of the problems with stand-up is people do it for 2 years and they might be good at it, and then they go, well, I'll never get an opportunity to do this. I'll never get an opportunity to be on television. I'll never get an opportunity to be on the radio or in the movies. And the longer you do it, those opportunities will come. But you got to be patient. You got to not worry about the other guy. That's something I learned from you. It's not don't judge yourself on somebody else's success. Oh shit, this guy's been doing it, you know. I've been doing it a year longer than this guy and he's you know, on this TV show. That'll drive you crazy. Yeah.
You know, just a word to the wise. Now that I'm this old, I might as well tell everybody that's on, you know, because you can't see me and you're not coming to the show anyway.
No, they might.
I'm 65 fucking years old.
You are.
Okay. There's no pension.
There isn't.
There's no insurance.
Exactly.
Plan.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, there's no golden watch. If I was to say to everybody, I'm out of this business for good. There's no fanfare. There's no party. Nobody.
No.
Nobody gives a flying fuck. And people say, when are you going to retire? I can't retire. What are you talking
about? You need to work.
I'll keep doing it until, you know, until I can't do it anymore.
I mean, it's a way to make money, even if it's not, there's no security really in it. I mean, you got to invest. And I mean, if you can invest in something, but you've given away some houses.
Tell me about it. I've given away more houses than the Habitat for Humanity.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hey-o.
Good God, yo.
I set you up on that one.
Thank you.
But yeah, it's... So we have chemistry, Bill.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, if someone wants to pay us to sit around and do this, I'm willing to do it.
We've worked together enough.
Yeah, exactly. But back to the rock and roll thing. Tell us about what goes, I mean, because we were talking about this before the show, and I told you I just bought a guitar.
Right.
And you were like, well, you know, you used to play, but your wrists weren't strong enough to play.
Yeah, my hands weren't strong. My fingers are really small.
Yeah.
I just couldn't hold the frets. The strings down on the frets hard enough for it to make sense.
Yeah, because for me, my thing is, I think my mom, I remember being a kid, and my mom said to me, I must have been 10 years old, and she goes, well, for your birthday, you can get piano lessons, or you can get, I'll buy you a 5-year subscription to Mad Magazine. This was a deal she cut with me 1 year. So you decide what you want to do. Because I liked music and I liked Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
And I went like, well, fuck, man. Mad Magazine. I got to go to the store and then beg her every month for that fucking thing. Just take the Mad Magazine. And that's, and I think that was a decision that ultimately shaped my life.
I think that's a no-brainer.
I think it is a no-brainer.
I think
when
the Mad Magazine was cheaper. I think she was counting on that. She's no dummy.
She would have to buy a piano or some sort of keyboard and all that.
Mad Magazine was 35 cents a week or a month or whatever the hell it came out.
But and being a guy who loves music and sort of got into that, and like when I was really getting into the Beatles, and this is, you know, this is in my 30s now, we're talking... I was like, you know, well, let me figure out how the Beatles did what they did. So I have books on recording. Mm-hmm. You know, I have books that have chapters on the Fairchild compressor for shit like that.
Holy shit.
I'm learning all this stuff, right? And then I'm learning about, you know, there's a whole book on, you know, the Beatles gear. What guitars and amps did they use? So I'm learning about that.
That was the standard back then.
Right. So you're learning about all this stuff. And then you're like, well, why don't I just get a guitar and learn how to do that? So about 12 years ago, went on Craigslist, bought an acoustic guitar for like $90 from some guy that you couldn't play.
Mm-hmm.
The fucking strings were half an inch off the thing.
Yep.
And you look at it now, because I still have it in the basement, the neck is like a ski slope on it. And, you know, and then they're like, well, turn the truss rod. I don't fucking know what that does, right? I turned it a couple times. I don't think it got any better. So I put it away. You know, I tried playing that. I bought a little book and tried that for 3 months. Well, now they've got... You know, I showed you the video game Rocksmith,
right?
Which I picked up.
Yeah.
You know, I bought an electric guitar the other day, bought an Epiphone, which is, I guess, that is the top of the line Epiphone.
Okay.
It's basically a 335 Gibson. It's got a couple little things, you know, that it does differently than that. But it's, you know, it's about a third of the price. And that guitar has been played by a lot of bands I like, too. So it made sense, I didn't want to buy a Beatles guitar and try to be the Beatles. I said, I'll buy something that I just kind of like the look of and that I'd pick up. So I started doing that. And then, you know, now you're down that whole road. And then I buy an amp and then I'm into that. So that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, good.
As a hobby.
Yeah.
That'll probably, you know, never go anywhere, but I enjoy it.
Well, sure. You know, everybody needs a hobby.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So what did you do? What are you doing that way? I mean, you still play anything? Piano?
Oh, you know, there's this little... A trio that plays up in Auburn Hills every once in a while, and I'll sit in with them for a couple, two, three songs. But I make an ass of myself on stage enough where I don't have to go up there and do it.
But is being in a band easier than being a comic in the sense that if the audience isn't paying attention, who gives a shit?
That's exactly right.
But do band members, I guess I haven't interviewed enough people in bands, but do they, or maybe they wouldn't be honest about it, do they give a shit? Or is it kind of like, hey, I'm getting my money?
It all depends on what kind of band you are.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're up there trying to get people to dance and they're not dancing, then you've got a problem.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you're up there and you realize that, well, you know, we're kind of background.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we're just a live jukebox up here, then that's what you are.
Yeah.
You know, so, and like comedy, you still get paid whether people laugh or not. So it's it all depends on what kind of music you're doing, what you're there for.
Because I think for comics, it's like, boy, if they're not laughing, I'm failing. Even if you're doing the show that's worked 500 times.
I mean, how many wedding bands have you seen where the guy's up on stage with a band saying, come on, everybody, get out on the dance floor. I mean, he's trying to get people out there because he's measuring his success by people getting out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of these guys, this trio in the corner, you know, they're just, you know,
just there
to listen to.
Enjoying themselves and trying to do that. Yeah. Yeah, and then what kind of music do you like? I know, but tell everybody at home.
I'm a keyboard guy. You know, it's all the old keyboard bands. You know,
right?
Journey and Genesis and Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and all these guys. They had all this electronic stuff because that's what I was really into. I had back in the day when they were rare. I had a couple synthesizers.
Yeah.
Actually had a thing called a Mellotron, which I won't even try to explain to anybody.
Well, we've talked, you know, it's funny. I remember you bringing that up years ago on this show.
Yeah.
And then as I started getting into the Beatles, that's the beginning of Strawberry Fields
that's
Forever.
Exactly right.
A Mellotron.
The flute.
That's probably the most famous example of that in pop music, the Mellotron. Tape loops.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a loop. It was just a single strand.
It was
lasted.
A single strand.
Well, and it only lasted 7 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
That's how long the note was. That's all you had.
Yeah.
You had to lift your finger, and then a spring would pull the tape back into the start position,
okay.
And then you'd start to play it again.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of these Mellotron songs that you hear, like another famous one is Space Oddity.
Okay.
That's got a lot of Mellotron.
David Bowie.
David Bowie.
Okay.
But that's why you don't hear the guy holding the chords that long.
Yeah.
Because you only got 7 seconds.
Right. Yeah, so that's, I mean, I and those, and it's funny when you know about keyboard music, because now is probably more music made on keyboards than ever before, but it's none of the stuff that you're going to like.
Well, it's all
because
versatile.
It's too generic, I think, in a way, right? Or is it too? Is the sound just that? Because I feel like, from knowing music, that, you know, chasing tone, they say, with guitar players is a lot of what you do.
Yeah.
And with now with stuff being, you know, you just buy the machine or you buy the plug-in and you've got that sound like that.
All right. But like I said, that's.
But back then,
but that's why
you had
the recording business. You know, you had wheels turning here, and you had a tape loop doing echo over here, and the knobs are flashing, and you don't have that anymore. You know, shit just sits here and looks at you, and you're recording.
Well, I'm sure those guys are talking about careers going out the window.
Well, and that's
recording
exactly,
guys, you can record. You know,
and
I mean, we're recording right now.
And we went on to lament about that when I set up this dinner with Dan Dallas and George Paddock, or this lunch that we're having on Wednesday,
right?
Talking because I said something recently on Facebook about, you know, everybody's a comic, you know, sitting in a bar and somebody says, what are you doing? I'm a comedian. And they always say, oh, yeah, my buddy does that.
Yeah, yeah,
my
yeah.
brother does that.
My nephew's a comedian.
Yeah, yeah. My son does some of that, you know.
Uh-huh.
And
I love it when you go, I do stand-up comedy, and they go, oh, my nephew does improv.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, well, that does nothing to do with that. That's.
And George Paddock, he posted, he says, you know, the recording business is the same way.
Yeah.
You know, to be an engineer, you had to know what you're doing. Now it's all on computer, and any idiot can be an engineer.
Yeah,
now, you know.
I
mean,
that's
look
true.
At you. You got all sorts of shit going on here. You're an engineer. You never went to school for this shit.
I have musical instruments.
This
amps
radio show sounds as good as anything coming out of, you know, WNIC or anything like that.
Yeah, I hope so.
WOMC.
There's a learning curve for this stuff. Yeah, but it's not. It ain't much.
No.
And you know, if you look at that amp I got, there's a little wheel on that, and it models 12 different amps. So
it's
you got
crazy.
Your Vox AC30, you got a Marshall on there,
and
you got a Fender amp,
and
whatever
they do have
you want.
A program for, you know, like a keyboard workstation
that'll
duplicate the Mellotron now.
Yeah.
And it sounds exactly like it.
But don't they actually record a Mellotron, isn't that how it
how
works?
I don't know how they're duplicating it. I don't know if they sampled it or what they did, but I heard this band doing it one day, and I looked at it because I heard the sound, and I said, what the hell? And I talked to the keyboard guy during the break. I said, man, where did you get that? And he says, oh, it's a program you can buy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
bought it.
So
somebody rehearsed. Because I know that's the thing, like with, because, you know, and Springsteen's another guy. Like, so I went on YouTube and I'm watching the rig rundown of the piano player, Roy Bittan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a grand piano on stage with him every night, right? How are they shipping this grand piano? What's a MIDI piano?
Yeah.
And the guy says, well, look, you hit the key, you know, you hit the key harder and it's a different sample that plays. So when he plays, no matter how hard he hits, there's a different sample for that sound.
Wow.
And he said, and it feels like a real piano because it's got all that shit built
it's
into
got all
it.
The action,
but the music that you're hearing coming out are all samples. Just, you know, and I'm like, well, boy, they don't have to tune this fucking thing when they haul it around and stuff like that. It's amazing.
Right.
And people don't know the difference.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met, as a matter of fact, I met Robert Moog.
Okay,
back in 1973, went to an audio engineers convention in New York, 73, 74, and he had a big display there, and I talked to him for a long time.
Yeah.
Because I was so into synthesizers. They were brand new back
then. Right, yeah.
They were just starting to appear on
records.
Well,
the Beatles did, I think, Here Come the Sun as Moog on it, right?
I don't.
It was the Abbey Road album, I think, when they finally got one. Yeah. I think it's that, woo, that kind of like... Under the melody, there's like a woo. I can't do it, but you can get Here Comes the Sun.
Okay.
Go listen to that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the number.
Google.
You know, that's the number one. In the streaming age, the number one Beatles song is Here Comes the Sun.
Really?
Based on what people listen to.
That
is their number one song. George Harrison finally can tell those guys to fuck off.
Yeah.
he's been dead for 20 years almost, but yeah, he's finally won. He's more popular
than
John and Paul.
The quiet Beatle.
Yeah.
You know the most popular karaoke song?
Ooh. By the Beatles or by anybody?
By anybody.
Ooh. I'm going to take a guess here. I've been to some karaoke nights.
Yep.
Sweet Caroline.
Nope.
All right.
Patsy Cline, Crazy.
Oh.
I'm crazy.
Oh, that's women. You know what?
But, you know, women carry up more than guys do.
That's the women shit. I should have guessed women shit.
Number one, yeah.
Yeah.
Women shit.
That's women. That's great.
Send your cards and letters to your girlfriend.
Listen, I've got a history of, because Corey and I will review like a television show.
Mm-hmm.
Like Orange is the New. You see Orange is the New Black?
Some of it,
what's your review? Well, it's for girls. That's how we, there's things like that where you review it and you go, there's nothing right. It's not for me. It's for girls. It's not that it's bad. It's just for girls.
Right.
And girls, you know, so when you say Patsy Cline crazy, I get that. It's for girls.
Okay.
You know.
That movie, it's for girls.
Yeah, it's for girls.
Chick flick. But they hate when you say that, though.
Well, they don't want to be called out on it. Because I think some, people are very predictable. You go, you like this, you like that, you like that show. Yeah. Sure, you'll like this show.
Yeah.
It's very easy to figure out people nowadays, I think.
Well, look.
Because
we
all don't have to like the same thing anymore either. That's another thing about media, music, television, whatever. You know, if you never have to watch it, you never have to watch a TV show because, you'd have three channels and, two of them were the new, so you were watching what was on the third channel by default. No one has to do that anymore.
And ladies, if you're listening, and I'm sure you're not, but ladies, if you're listening, the one thing I found fairly consistent about women is that you're always astonished when guys don't like what you like. You know, they just can't understand. Well, how can you not like that?
Yeah.
You know, that was a great movie. How can you not like that movie?
Right.
Well, I didn't like it. and they want you, how come you don't like liver?
Yeah.
I love Lou. You know, they don't understand, why people don't like the same shit they do. I've always found that to be kind of amazing.
And you think it's women more than other types of people
I don't know. You know, I really don't want to go there. But I'll be honest. Women always tend to think that they know what we're thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they always think that, I know how guys feel. I know how they think. I don't know how many times I've heard that. And I'm going, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Because I got no clue what you're thinking or how you feel. I really don't. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
You know, we're completely different creatures.
Yeah. Yeah, women, I think, and I think when it comes to comedy, boy, women have a real, I'll say that too about comics. Yeah, it's guys for girls. Yeah, this is women like this guy.
And here's another thing. Yeah. If you take a look at the various comedy concerts on Netflix, I think better than half of them are women at this point.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think women like other comics, other female comics, in a disproportionate way. I think the audience for female comics is usually females. You know, again, I'm generalizing, I think there's a lot of that.
I think you're right, because, and Lily Tomlin said this, lady, so don't write your letters to me about this, but she said that, female comics struggle in front of a mixed audience because an audience has to surrender to a certain extent.
Uh-huh.
They have to go, okay, you don't want them sitting there going, make me laugh. Uh-huh. At some point, the audience has got to go, all right, I'm with you.
Yeah.
And guys have a hard time surrendering. That was her word, surrendering to the female comic. And I always thought that was a good point.
Yeah, that is.
And not only that, ladies, female comics, if you're listening, you talk too fucking much. You take forever to set up a punchline.
That is
a
problem.
Get to the point. Yeah. Holy shit.
Well, that's a problem with a lot of new comedians anyway.
Yeah,
they
can't edit.
You figure out what I always tell comics, look at it this way. Here's the punchline. How much do you need to say in order to get them to laugh at the punchline?
Right.
Because the setup is important, but if you don't need the setup, if it's not the setup or the punchline, it doesn't need to be in the act.
I was working on a DVD that I tried to get done before the show this weekend, and it's not going to happen.
Oh, okay.
But it's called Be the Funniest Bastard in the Bar.
Okay.
And all it is, it's just a bunch of jokes.
Yeah.
You know, right now, I think we're going to have like 40 of them on there.
Okay.
But at the beginning of the DVD, I have a little tutorial on how to tell a joke. And I say there's three basic mistakes.
Okay.
There's the repeater, there's the pontificator, and there's the embellisher.
Okay.
All right? So the repeater says, okay, so a guy goes into a bar, right? Okay?
Yeah.
And he goes into a bar, all right? And he sits down on a stool. So he's sitting on a stool, goes into a bar, sits down on a stool, and he orders his beer, you see. I've said bar stool, I've said
exactly,
bar.
Yeah,
stop it.
We're with you already. You we know where
the,
you're at.
Yeah, you got to give the audience credit. They're way ahead of you.
Yeah.
So that's that guy. He drives me nuts. then there's the pontificator. Mm-hmm. And he goes, okay, this guy, he goes into a bar. And he sits down. And he decides to order a beer. See, that guy, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, he just plays and he pauses where you don't need pauses. And he's just, you know, he's just milking it for all it's worth. And then there's the embellisher.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here we go. So this guy, all right, he works in this apartment building, right? No, it's an office, but it's an office building in downtown. And it's a Friday, and he's just dying. And he can't wait to get off work, right? And so as soon as it's 5 o'clock, man, he bolts out of there, and he goes down the street, and he finds this local bar.
Yeah.
A guy walks into a bar. I don't need all the backstory. Quit trying to make it sound like it's a real fucking story.
Yeah, that
it's
is a thing.
A joke.
Yeah,
but those are the three basic mistakes.
No, that's all good advice. And are you performing these jokes on this DVD this comes out?
Well, I just set that up, but then I finished.
Are you
joke.
Performing them on stage? Or
oh,
are you
no,
performing
no,
them
I'm
just,
at bars.
You're, oh, you're
I'm
at
sitting
the bar.
At a bar, and I got, you know,
oh,
two, three
good
guys
idea.
Sitting around me, and of course, they kind of fake laugh and blah, 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 because
oh,
they've heard them all before.
That's good.
So, but I can't get it done before this weekend.
Oh, just for technical reasons?
I just, the guy that's editing doesn't have the time.
Yeah. Well, that's
can't hook up,
editing
and I gotta
and
be there,
is,
and it's a lot of shit.
Well, that's what I was showing you. I shot some of, not bragging or anything, but just to relate to that, I shot some photos of you
right.
that we used, that the Comedy Castle used for the publicity.
Yeah,
Funny
Bald Guy, you can look at some
yeah,
of those.
There's some
right
of them
there.
And I was just showing you, Bill came in today, and we had edited, and I go, you know, look, I need to edit all these photos, and I'll show you the ones you like, we'll go through them, and you see, it's like, you could sit there all day and tweak that shit.
Yeah.
And it's, even though you have the power, it's still, you have to, the time it is, and that kills me, too. You know, I do this show, you know, the actual editing, the technical stuff when I'm done is probably, you know, only 20 minutes, but then I got to write the thing and publish it to the website, and that takes about an hour.
Wow.
So the post is as long as the show, and then when you add in the setup, you know, I'm making a 90-minute show, but it's taken me 4 or 5 hours.
But I got to ask you, Joel, now, how old are you at this point?
At this point, I'm 46.
46?
Yeah.
See, now, you know, to the 20-somethings.
Yeah. I'm an old guy. Oh, I get it.
You're old school.
Sure.
You know, and I was bitching to Kevin Kramus about, you know, trying to get this website down. I'm working on a new website, you know, and stuff like that, and trying to find some kid that's going to do this for me. They refuse to call you back.
Yeah.
No, I'll do it for you. Just give me a call. You leave a message. You never hear from them.
Yeah.
But talking about all these young guys coming up, they have these killer websites.
Okay.
And he goes, that's all they do all damn day.
Yeah.
They sit at home and they tinker with it, and they fool with it, and they know how to do that stuff, and he says, you're never going to get anything that looks as good as what some of these kids have.
Because they
know
willing
how to, do
to
it.
Spend the time
and
on
they spend
it
and the time, and they'd rather be doing that than
and
anything
if,
else.
If you don't have the time, then it's hard to make that work. I mean, for this show, I carve out a day, and then I post it the next day, because I don't want to spend 5 hours in one day working on it, so I split it between 2 days.
Yeah.
And
well,
you go
I appreciate
from there.
The time.
Well, it's good to have Bill here. I always like talking to Bill, and go see him this weekend at the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan. 248-542-9900 if you want to make a reservation. ComedyCastle.com. You can buy your tickets right there online. Pick your own seat.
Yep.
You can sit next to the bar guys if you want.
Yeah.
Wherever they're going to be sitting.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Now, can people get on the bus, or is that just reserved?
Well, if they go to one of the three bars, they can get on the bus.
One of the bars.
Yeah.
Tell everybody what the bars
are. Yeah, it's Duffy's in Auburn Hills, a Hideout in Clawson, and Royal Inn in Royal Oak.
And it's the same bus is going to scoop up all those people?
Yeah, it goes from one to one to one, and then it takes you back afterwards.
Cool.
And if you've seen parking lately in downtown Royal Oak, trust me, the bus is going to be a deal.
They tore up like half the town.
Yeah, they're rebuilding Royal Oak completely.
Yeah, and I don't know for the better, but we'll see.
Well, we'll find out once the dust settles.
Yeah, I know. Do you have, just by the way, do you use your phone for music at all? Is that a thing you've come over to?
I haven't.
So if you want to listen to a song, what are you doing right now?
I just have DVDs.
You got CDs.
I just got CDs. I just
throw those in. Put them in the car.
Yeah, I put them in the car. I really don't listen to any music at home.
No?
You know, if I'm at home, I'm watching TV.
No, I gotcha.
If I need background, then I'll put on some show that I don't mind ignoring and wash the dishes.
Because I'm all digital. And yeah. all and Bluetooth now. Do you got Bluetooth? Do you know what Bluetooth is?
Yeah, I know
is?
What it yeah, is, but I don't
a,
have anything.
This is a Bluetooth speaker. I've got Bluetooth headphones.
I can't believe the fidelity is as good as hardwired. I have a hard time believing that.
I agree with you. As a, look, I've got a hardwired
You got wires all over
system.
The damn place.
Exactly.
If you
but,
ever wanted to hang yourself, you wouldn't have any trouble here.
But here's the thing. This is convenient. I can walk around the whole house with this fucking thing, and it's great.
But I just don't care.
Take it on the porch. You can mow the lawn. You can have your music going there, and it's all good.
But I'm into. I'm all about fidelity.
Yeah.
I mean, if you saw my setup, I mean, you know, that's
okay.
That's what I'm all about.
I haven't seen your setup.
I can't compromise when it comes.
Interesting.
To it. I'm an old.
But the but
I'm an
I
old
think,
audio guy.
But you have the convenience versus that.
Yeah, that's
and how
exactly
good,
right.
And the argument against the hi-fi guys, or how good does it need to sound?
But that's the competition.
Well,
you,
what it, well,
you want the best sound
but, you know,
thing on
the
block.
But the best fidelity now is digital, though. Because you got to get, but yeah. you got it, but you have to get the high, you don't get the CD version, the streaming 24-bit stuff. Right from the master
tapes. People out there listening to this with the $3,000 Macintosh amps that are tube are going to tend to disagree with.
Well,
you.
But those people, I think, are even going digital, at least for the source.
But yeah, but I'm
the
talking.
Source.
But I'm talking about in terms of speakers and the preamp and the amplifier and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I still have. I got a turntable.
Yeah.
You know, and sure, the records pop and.
Right, and they wear out, and they scratch.
Yeah, but there's still a certain grittiness to it that you
love.
Can't replace.
But do you hate, like, the new vinyl guys who have, like, the USB turntable, or they have the all-in-one with the speaker? I mean, are you not
I don't know much about it.
Okay. Because, well, you know, they sell vinyl records at, like, Bed Bath & Beyond and Target, and it's for people to, like, decorate their rooms with. They're not really listening to the records. how about that,
and I was just
old-timer?
I was just at the flip side in Clawson.
Okay.
And they're having an end-of-digital sale.
What does that mean?
I think they're getting rid of all their CDs.
And they're just going to have vinyl.
I don't know what they're going to do.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, there's a place called, you ever go to Found Sound over on 9 Mile?
No.
Oh, you should go over there.
Okay.
You have a good time over there.
Yeah.
Because it's all vinyl.
But I guess we're all going to, everybody's going to thumb drives or something. I don't know. They were talking about it on the radio, and I couldn't understand what the hell they were telling me. But apparently the CD is on its way out.
I mean, I think because those people, if you want the CD, the digital file's just easier to get. You know, you don't need to carry things with you. You never lose anything.
And that's why some of these old bands are still around, because they're still making money.
Yeah.
You know, I bought Close to the Edge, you know, on an album. And then I got an 8-track in my car, and I bought it on the 8-track.
Yeah.
And then cassettes came out, and I bought it on cassette. And then when the CD came out, I got it on CD. So I've purchased that album 6 times in my life. No wonder they're making money. Now I'm gonna, and now there's going to be another format.
There
I'm going to have to buy it again.
Well, I
want to download it on my phone, I got to purchase it again.
I pay $8 a month and I can get anything for $8 a month.
Well, yeah, but you're rolling in dough. I can't afford that $8 a month.
$8 a month.
You know what I could do with $8 a month?
Holy what would you
shit.
Do with $8 a month?
Buy some pot.
Oh, everyone vapes now, Bill.
Yeah,
no one smokes the pot
anymore.
See,
there you go. Everything's going digital.
It's all digital.
Son of a bitch.
Pot is digital now, Bill.
Let's wrap this up. I got to get back to the old folks.
All right, we'll wrap this
shit.
Up. Go see Bill Hildebrand at Comedy Castle this weekend, the 26th to the 28th of July. ComedyCastle.com. Thank you, Bill. What else can I say? I think we've said it all. Yeah. You're always a great guest.
Check
You're one
out
of the best
Funny Ball Guy on Facebook.
Funny
Let's
Ball
see
Guy
how many
on Facebook.
Yep.
Any more cruise ships coming up? We just hinted at those.
No, that's another deal where they're putting on young kids where it should be old guys like me, because that's who's on the boats except for spring break, you know.
And the spring breakers are out there.
Yep.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Cruise ships. Where else are old people going to go?
Really?
If you take away the cruise ships.
Well, thanks for playing this. I thought you were going to play something like Green Acres or something. To rub it in.
No, this is the traditional ending theme
right.
song,
okay,
and that's
good.
Fine.
I
mean, we could have went out on Yes or something. We could have had some big something else to go out on if you would have requested that.
No, it's
again. I have access to anything.
It's kind of
I can play anything.
It's the end of the show. And it's kind of a sad song.
It's you know you come into the it's you know. The show opens on a high, you know, energy number, and now we're kind of... And speaking of synthesizers, what do you think this guy's playing?
some cheap ass piece of shit.
I believe the point of this guy is he's trying to sound like, you know, an old video game or some.
Well, he's doing a good job of it.
All right, well, you're doing a good job.
This is the worst Mario Brothers I've ever played.
This is the sad Mario Brothers that didn't make any money. Come see Bill this weekend. I'll be over there, too. Thanks, as always, to Bill Hildebrandt, funny bald guy on Facebook.
Thanks, Joel. Adios.
Catch you there, brother. We'll catch you next time on Joel Radio. I'll talk more about The Gathering, too, with Corey when he's back. So you get your full rundown there, kids. See ya.